The Outspoken Cyclist podcast is supported by the Dodd Camera Company. An Ohio institution in photography for over 100 years, Dodd Camera has stayed right in step with the newest in digital cameras and accessories, as well as offering services such as photo restoration and large format printing. Dodd Camera stores are located in Cleveland, Dayton, Cincinnati, Chicago, and now Columbus in the Oak Creek Shopping Center on Cameron Avenue. If you don't have one in your town, you can find them online at doddcamera.com. At Dodd Camera, the focus is on you.
Time for the Outspoken Cyclist, your weekly conversation about bicycles, cycling, and related topics. The Outspoken Cyclist is produced for broadcast and podcast, with a new show available every Saturday at 6 p.m. In Northeast Ohio, you can hear it on WJCU 88.7 FM. Catch our podcast after the close of the on-air show at OutspokenCyclist.com, iTunes, Stitcher, or PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Now here's your host, Diane Jenks.
Welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist. I'm your host, Diane Jenks, and this is our show for November 25th, 2017. I hope you all had a great Thanksgiving. Did you eat too much? Were you able to get out for a ride or a long walk? Or perhaps you even participated in a turkey trot? This week, I welcome back Dr. Gabe Merkin to talk about all the effects of overeating or eating the wrong stuff or even eating the right stuff. Recent studies are showing some new realities about cholesterol, sugared drinks, and the effects of too much intense exercise. Gabe will give us some background on all of these issues and offer some healthy ways to avoid diseases such as diabetes and AFib. I'll also speak with author, coach, fellow podcaster, and relentless blogger Molly Herford. Molly manages websites, blogs, a coaching practice, and still finds time to pen books, travel, and keeps up a steady stream of social media. But what's really cool about Molly is her authenticity. It's going to be a fun conversation. Finally, our gift of the week for the upcoming holiday season is the new Shake Dry jacket from Gore-Tex. I'll even have a couple of news items scattered here and there. So let's head on down to Florida and check in with Dr. Gabe Merkin. Hi, Gabe. Welcome back to The Outspoken Cyclist. Thanks for joining me. Happy holidays.
I am delighted.
I am delighted, too. We haven't spoken in a while, and I thought this would be a good time to talk about eating and food and how drinking affects your body's ability to stay healthy. I cannot believe how much research you do every month, and you produce your e-zine. You're always available to me. I really appreciate it.
Well, you're too kind.
Well, so let's talk about what we should and shouldn't eat and why. We're at a bad time of year for that because everybody's eating a lot of stuff they probably shouldn't.
Well, let me tell you, there's a lot of controversy about nutrition, but there is virtually no controversy about four bad food factors. Here we go. Red meat, processed meat. Sugar-added foods, sugar drinks, and fried foods. And as we go along, we'll talk about why these four food groups are accepted by the vast majority of the scientific community as being harmful to your health. And the incredible thing is that you know that the same lifestyle risk factors that increase your risk for cancer also increase your risk for diabetes, heart attacks, strokes, and premature death.
So they're all somehow connected, and they're all connected to nutrition.
Well, yes, there's a major connection to what you eat. And the incredible thing is that modern research shows that calorie counting, for example, is not very effective in the long term in controlling weight. It's just a failure. So that means that what you eat is far more important than how much you eat.
One of the things you talked about in one of your recent, in fact, I think it was this week's e-zine, I get your email every week, is something about nascent cholesterol and what it is, you know, how is it different from what we know from HDL and LDL, good cholesterol, bad cholesterol? What's this nascent cholesterol?
All right. We know that there's a lousy cholesterol. Lousy starts with L and so does LDL. So lousy LDL increases your risk for getting a heart attack. And we also know about a healthy HDL, HH. Healthy HDL is supposed to be associated with prevention of heart attacks. Well, we've now, in this scientific community, accept the fact that the higher your LDL, the lousy cholesterol, the more likely you are to get a heart attack. In fact, the current recommendations across the board in all medical societies is that if your lousy LDL is above 100, you need lifestyle changes and probably also drugs. The problem is that the HDL, the healthy HDL, the data isn't so clear. For example, we know that having a very low HDL is associated with increased risk for heart attack. But surprise, having a very high HDL puts you at significantly increased risk for having a heart attack. So both low good cholesterol and both high good cholesterol increase your risk for a heart attack. And so we had no explanation to find out how this was possible. And now we find out that there's a parallel between a precursor to HDL called nascent HDL and HDL, so that when your nascent HDL goes up, so does your HDL go up. But it's the nascent HDL that's protecting you, not the HDL. And suddenly now, medical communities throughout the world say, if your LDL is over 100, regardless of your HDL, you need immediate treatment to prevent a heart attack.
Wow. So how do they measure nascent HDL relative to the way they measure HDL and LDL?
Well, it's an intricate laboratory test, and it's not available. You see, this is
a
major breakthrough that was first reported that excites all the cardiologists and endocrinologists and surgeons and everybody else. This is an incredible breakthrough, and because it was presented by very respected researchers, and it was tested over lots and lots of time. So now, eventually, we're going to have a nascent HDL blood test. We don't have it now.
Okay, we know it exists, and we're working on a blood test. So let's say your LDL comes in above 100. At what point, and what are the factors involved, would you have to go to drugs as opposed to lifestyle changes?
Well, first of all, lifestyle changes are more effective than drugs, and this is going to shock a lot of you, and that's because physicians are busy, and it takes less time to write a prescription than it does to teach somebody about nutrition. But the message I want to give you is that across the board, everybody agrees that lifestyle changes lower cholesterol and prevent heart attacks. And we started out our discussion earlier with what's very harmful, and we're going to talk now about what's very good.
Okay, hang on. Let me remind our listeners, we're speaking with Dr. Gabe Merkin, and we are talking about staying healthy, especially this time of year when we are prone to eating things that might not be so good for us. Okay, let's go.
All right, here we go. What I'm about to tell you is not controversial. It's accepted by the medical community. And then we'll come up to what's controversial and has not been decided. But right now, and I'm going to repeat again because it's very important, mammal meat, red meat, and that includes pig and cow and all mammals, is associated with increased risk for heart attacks, cancers, diabetes, and premature death. Red meat, processed meat, sugar-added foods, sugar drinks, and fried foods. And then the good things are, even if you're trying to lose weight, you can eat a virtually unlimited amount of fruits, vegetables, nuts, beans, and seeds. Because these foods are absorbed not too well in your upper intestinal tract, and these foods are associated with protection against heart attacks, strokes, diabetes, cancers, and premature death. Now, controversial, and I have to tell you that if you start going through the literature, you're going to find eggs, dairy, chicken, and fish. You're going to find as many articles making these four things good as bad. So I have to tell you that eggs, dairy, fish, and turkey and chicken are controversial because of the scientific literature, even though I have strong opinions that eggs are probably harmful, but I don't have the data to tell you that everybody agrees, and the same thing about dairy.
Huh. All right. So now I have a question about the sugared drinks, especially people who tend to drink artificially sweetened drinks. I know there's a lot of data, a lot of information about diet drinks, but...
Yes, and we're very concerned about artificial sweeteners, all of them. And I want to go over the scientific studies that everybody agrees on. We have a special test called a PET scan where you can see the parts of your brain are active. So when you take any artificial sweetener, I'm talking about natural artificial sweeteners also, all of them, and people take them, they turn on, the PET scan shows that you turn on the pleasure center in your hypothalamus that makes you hungry. And the literature strongly shows that artificial sweeteners increase your hunger so you eat more. In fact, some of the studies show that the difference between taking artificial sweeteners and not using them can amount to 500 extra calories a day that you eat because of that increased hunger that comes from it. That's established. Now, we've not established that artificial sweeteners are harmful like sugar is. So there is a debate. Although certain artificial sweeteners do change the bacteria in your colon that dictate your own immunity. So when I talk about artificial sweeteners, I'll tell you they'll make you hungry, make you fatter, but we don't know if they're harmful.
So how do they tie into things like diabetes and cholesterol?
Oh, because diabetes, we have a new definition of diabetes. Diabetes used to be defined as having a fasting blood sugar over 125. That's nonsense, because we now know that lots of people with normal fasting blood sugars have very high blood sugars after they eat. And that means that a high rise in blood sugar after you eat damages every cell in your body, and that includes impotence, dementia, cancers, heart attacks. Osteoporosis is caused by a high rise in blood sugar also. So the message that we gather now is that you define diabetes now not by what your fasting blood sugar is, because it'll miss a lot of diabetics, but by how high your blood sugar rises. And the new definition that the endocrinologists and the cardiologists are using for the definition of diabetes is 1 hour after you eat, if your blood sugar is over 140, you are getting cell damage. And if you want to call it diabetes, fine. If you don't want to call it diabetes, that's fine too. But you have to say that blood sugars that rise over 140 an hour after you eat are associated with cell damage throughout your body.
Okay. So there are two types of diabetes, type 1, type 2. One of them requires insulin, type 1. Type 2, lifestyle changes can get it under control. What about those people with type 1? I know they're doing a lot of research.
All right. That's now felt to be an autoimmune disease or type 2 that was let go too long. It means that your insulin comes from beta cells in your pancreas. And type 1 diabetes mostly means that your beta cells are dead. Your pancreas is dead, so you can't make insulin. So all of these people have to be treated with insulin, and there is no cure for a dead pancreas. When it's dead, it's dead, and you have to take insulin, and you will have a premature death. On the other hand, the 95% of all diabetes means you can't respond to insulin. This is incredible because we now cure the vast majority of type 2 diabetics, the diabetes in which you can't respond to insulin. Now, let me give you the major breakthrough for the cure for diabetes. What everybody eats, everybody's blood sugar rises. That's a given, okay? And you keep your blood sugar from rising too high by your pancreas releasing insulin, and then insulin drives sugar from the bloodstream into your liver. That's how you avoid diabetes. Insulin drives sugar from your bloodstream to lower your blood sugar into your liver. However, if you have excess fat in your liver, that means that your liver doesn't accept the sugar driven by insulin. This is an incredible breakthrough. And now the endocrinologists that are most of the knowledgeable endocrinologists draw a 1 hour after eating blood sugar. If it's over 140, you need immediate lifestyle changes to get the fat out of your liver. And I have to tell you that I can diagnose diabetes, and so can everybody else, just by watching people walk by them.
Oh, what do you see?
If you have huge amounts of fat in your belly and very small hips, you're already diabetic because your genetic makeup has made you store fat primarily in your belly. If you have huge belly and a huge buttocks, you may not be diabetic. But if you have small buttocks and a big belly, that means that you store most of your fat in your liver, and to cure your diabetes, you're going to have to get the fat out of your liver. And for some people, that means get most of the fat out of your body, because whatever the last place you're going to get the fat out of your body is your belly and your liver. And that's called, in scientific papers, organ fat. So organ fat around inside your liver is dangerous. And the fat underneath your skin or in your buttocks is probably not so dangerous.
Wow. So I have two.
It's incredible.
It is incredible.
Incredible. So if, in fact, I have to tell you a story. You know, I go around, I'm in a retirement village with 125,000 people. And the vast numbers of people are diabetic and don't even know it. In fact, the scientific studies show that probably 70% of all diabetics don't know they have diabetes. But anyway, I walk around, and when I see somebody with a great big belly and little buttocks, I go up to them and I say, "Pardon me, but you know you have diabetes, and it's going to shorten your life." So I did that last week, and a guy looked at me and he said, "That's funny. My father lived to 106. And I said, "How so?" He said, "Oh, he minds his own business."
That's funny. Yeah, so I guess that shut you up, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I have two more things I want to talk about on our show this week. And that is, a book came out over the summer called The Haywire Heart, about exercise, too much exercise that can kill you. And I think it ties into something called AFib. I'm not positive if they are the same, but some of these seemingly healthy middle-aged athletes who are just doing incredible things are having serious heart problems. What's going on?
Okay. This first came up only 7 years ago when studies from Finland showed that cross-country skiers, master cross-country skiers, guys in their 80s are competing in 100-mile cross-country ski races. These guys, you'd think, would be the healthiest people in the world. 80 years old, racing 100 miles. Well, they one paper, two papers, three papers, and it's established that these master athletes and later have a very high incidence of atrial fibrillation. That means that the upper part of the heart doesn't contract properly, so clots can accumulate in the upper part of the heart, and these people are at very high risk for throwing the clot from the upper part of the heart into the heart arteries to get a heart attack or into the brain to get a stroke. That's established. But the incredible thing is, and this is incredible, these are recent studies, the master athletes aren't getting clots. And younger people with atrial fibrillation are getting a tremendous amount of clots. In fact, so that every doctor, knowledgeable doctor, will put every patient with atrial fibrillation that, who isn't a master athlete, immediately on anti-clotting medicine because of the very high risk of throwing clots. It's very dangerous. The master athletes are having a high incidence of atrial fibrillation, but they're not dying and they're not getting caught. And they're still racing. And incredible, I have four papers I've collected over the last 2 years showing that the treatment for people, younger people with atrial fibrillation, is exercise. They're telling people with atrial fibrillation that you increase your risk for clots by not exercising. Now, let me take you to the next level. We know that exercise prevents heart attacks. And heart attacks are caused by breaking a plaque off of your artery, and then you get bleeding and clotting and complete obstruction. A heart attack is caused not by narrowed arteries. It has nothing to do with narrow arteries. A heart attack occurs when you break off a plaque and you get bleeding and sudden complete obstruction where the heart gets no, part of the heart muscle gets no blood flow or oxygen at all. Exercise prevents heart attacks, and that's established. Everybody agrees that exercise prevents heart attacks by stabilizing the plaques so they don't break off. Plaques are caused by eating. Some of these people are idiots who are writing articles in common news media that are scaring people so they won't exercise. Everybody should exercise, and you should be checked because exercise can increase heart attack risk in some people, but exercise prevents heart attacks. But the message is that a heart attack is caused by breaking off a plaque. Exercise prevents the plaques from breaking, and what you eat causes the plaques to form in the first place. So if you have an older person who's exercising very heavily, he's eating two or three times as much as everybody else is because of all the calories he's burning, and if he has a lousy diet where he's eating huge amounts of red meat, processed meat, sugar-added foods, sugar drinks, and fried food, he's making more plaques. So that's the concern. The article in the newspapers didn't explain this. Exercise is good, and lots of exercise is better as long as you don't make more plaques.
So can you be tested for plaques?
Absolutely. It's called a calcium scan. What they do, they can scan your arteries. See, calcium blocks x-rays. So they can set x-rays into your neck, to your carotid artery, and they can measure the thickness of your plaque. And you get a calcium score from this test. And they will immediately tell you if you have too much plaques. And they can even measure the plaques in your heart arteries with a scan into your heart also.
You know, why do people not do that instead of... I mean, I would think with all the tests that are available and the ones that are recommended by doctors and Medicare and all that, why are they not just routinely doing a calcium scan? Or
well,
are they?
The doctors are routinely doing. The cardiologists are doing incredible numbers of calcium scores. But the population is incredibly ignorant of much of the recent breakthrough in medicine, which has been spectacular.
So the last thing I would like to ask you to offer our listeners is if you could make one suggestion to those who are either trying to maintain or lose weight, what would it be?
It's not how much you eat. It's what you eat. And you should immediately get on a diet that's loaded with fruits, vegetables. And I'm talking about weight loss. I said loaded with nuts, fruits, vegetables, beans, and seeds. And you should stop eating red meat, processed meat. That's the so-called delicatessen meats. You should not have sugar added foods, sugar drinks, and you should not have fried foods.
Well, Gabe, as always, I learned so much when I talked to you. I really appreciate you taking time to share all this information with us. We'll talk again soon. Stay happy. Stay healthy. You're lucky you're in Florida. It's beautiful today, but it's going to be cold here tomorrow. Say hello to Diana and thank you. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
All right. You take care. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
We'd like to thank our podcast sponsor, Dodd Camera, for their support of The Outspoken Cyclist. There is a close relationship between cycling and photography, and we're proud to have this family-owned business as a partner in our show. If you're in the market for photo equipment, want to learn more about taking great pictures, or maybe you're ready to launch your own YouTube channel, visit DoddCamera.com and see what Dodd Camera can do for you.
You're listening to the station that is your home for college radio in Cleveland, 88.7 FM, WJCU, University Heights.
Yep, we're back. And my first news item comes from the He Said, He Said Department of Pro Rider Spats. Seems our friend, retired pro cyclist Phil Guymon, called out Fabian Cancellara, repeating an old claim that Cancellara had a motor in his bike when he won at both Paris-Roubaix and Tour de Flanders in 2010. Cycling News reported, quote, in what seems like an attempt to defuse a war of words and promote his post-career commercial activities, Cancellara took to Twitter to invite Guymon to one of the 8 Chasing Cancellara events planned for 2018. The VIP events offer anyone a chance to take on Cancellara on a short timed route, with those who beat him awarded a, quote, Fabian Cancellara Conqueror Certificate, end quote. Cancellara concluded his offer by saying, I am very curious to see how much watt you can push. Start training. Hashtag no motor needed. In his inimitable style, Phil Guymon retorted with his usual, are there cookies? Bike rides should have cookies. As to whether Phil will take up the challenge, it's yet to be seen. The UCI, however, is investigating Cancellara. So have e-bikes finally arrived? In an article in Cycling Tips this week, as well as a Facebook post, it seems that Pinarello is the first to the party with a carbon fiber road e-bike. Here's what Cycling Tips said. High-end bike manufacturer Pinarello yesterday announced the debut of the Nitro, an electric assist carbon fiber road bike, and it was met with a lot of negative reactions. Electric bikes are wildly popular across the globe, and there's much to be said in favor of a little assist for when the loads get heavy, the terrain steep, and the elements challenging. But it wasn't the e-bike's capabilities that got people talking, however. Rather, the marketing surrounding the new bike, marketed at a sporting crowd of weekend warriors, recreationalists, and women, this is what the Italian company had to say about the bike. Nitro aims at a wide target, from the one that has no time to train but would never miss a weekend ride with friends, to women who would like to follow easily the men's pace, or even the ones who desire the experience cycling as a new way of life, climbing easily and going downhill safely and enjoying every single minute on the bike. Making their aim at the women's market even clearer, Pinarello used the story of a 24-year-old couple rider who's quoted saying, I've always wanted to go cycling with my boyfriend, but it seemed impossible. Soon everything will become possible. Well, the internet reacted in force, some in disgust, some with parody, and all recognizing that Pinarello completely missed the mark. Pushback was instant, ranging from women saying they can keep up just fine, thank you, to bad execution of the ad. Me, I'm way past being offended by stuff the bike industry does. Finally, I'd like to thank Liz at Thorpe Marketing for extending the offer to try the new Gore-Tex shake-dry jacket on our trip to Israel. Here's what I found. It's super, super lightweight, very windproof, true to size. It fits nicely. I did get the woman's cut and packs into its own pocket, easily fitting into our handlebar bag. I didn't test its waterproofness. There was no rain during the week, but it is supposed to be completely waterproof. The fabric is quiet, too. And that's always been a beef of mine with some of these tech apparel pieces. My only criticism is that it's only available in black. If you're interested, you can go to gore-tex.com and look for the Shake Dry products. All right, let's go back to our show. And it's off to Antwerp, Belgium, where I'm going to catch up with the multi-talented and incredibly busy Molly Herford. Hi, Molly. Welcome to the Outspoken Cyclist. Thanks for joining me.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you so much for having me. I'm super stoked.
Well, how is Europe? You're there and we're here back in the States.
It's been awesome. We started in London about, 10 days ago now. We were there for sort of a whirlwind tour, then busted over to Belgium, got settled here for a day and a half, then went up to Denmark for the World Cup, came back, and we're here for another day, and then we head to Germany for the next round of World Cups.
And what are you doing? You're not racing, though.
I am not racing, sadly. My cyclocross career is on hold for the last three seasons as I've been working with the Aspire Racing team, sort of running their logistics and stuff and traveling with them. So I get to be at all the big races and ride in all the cool places, but no racing for me right now.
Yeah, it doesn't all sound bad, you know?
You know what? It's actually pretty awesome. The secret is it's really fun to be at races and not have the pressure of needing to race or needing to eat this at this time or do this warm up. I just make sure they eat and I'm good.
They eat and that everything is where it's supposed to be, like bikes and
exactly.
Yeah, exactly. And food. So let's begin with your background a little bit. Tell us about where you grew up and how you became interested in sports and cycling, especially.
Yeah. So I'm a Jersey girl. I grew up in New Jersey. I'm hoping to lose the accent at some point now that I live in Ontario, but it doesn't seem to be happening anytime soon. Grew up there. I was the least athletic human being that you could possibly imagine. Like if you looked in the dictionary for the word bookworm, you'd have a picture of me hiding in a corner with a book. I once got in trouble for reading at recess, so I sewed a pocket in my coat so I could sneak a book onto the playground to keep reading. So me and athletics were not really simpatico for most of my life, but my dad raced triathlons back in the 80s. So when I hit college and realized that I was actually starting to, you know, get out of shape or, you know, gaining weight, I guess, was the big thing. I was like, oh, no, I should probably start working out. Which meant triathlon because it was literally the only sport I could think of that people did because my dad had done it. So,
right.
Yeah, I couldn't run a mile till I was 20. And then I started running and swimming and most of all riding, joined the Rutgers Cycling Club. And then I realized that biking was just it for me. I was in love. They got me on their cyclocross team. You know, I raced my first cross race and I was absolutely hooked. And luckily, I, you know, found a career in cycling journalism.
Yeah, really. I'd say in spades, you found a career with all the stuff you do. It's interesting you say that. I have a daughter who was just like that, a bookworm her whole life, and all of a sudden realized, I better get off my ass and do something, right?
Exactly.
Right, exactly. Well, you're also a writer. You're a triathlete. You're a writer. Along with your husband, you have a podcast, The Consummate mm-hmm. Athlete. Tell us a little bit about your podcast from podcaster to podcaster.
Yeah, so this is this fun thing we'd been, you know, kind of talking about for pretty much since we started dating. We both work in cycling so much. I wrote primarily about cycling until just the last year or two. And he's a cycling coach. And, you know, we really love doing other sports, which is like kind of our dirty secret. It's like, oh, I actually really love running and strength training and yoga and every other sport. But we had no reason to talk to people who did the other sports because I was always writing articles about cycling. So we kind of put together this, like, what kind of athlete do we want to be sort of idea. And, you know, the idea was we want to be the consummate athletes. So we want to be athletes that can, you know, go on a bike ride with people one day, but then go on like a 15-mile hike the next day, but then go to a parkour class or like a pickup game of soccer or, you know, toss a football around and be somewhat competent. So we decided we'd start a podcast so we could talk to people to get advice on how to become consummate athletes. And it's been so much fun because we've gotten to talk to like NFL players and NASCAR drivers and all of these people outside of our normal little cycling bubble and talk to all of our favorite people in the cycling bubble. So sort of the best of all worlds.
Yeah, it sounds like it. How long have you been podcasting?
A year and a half now, just about.
Yeah, I know how that goes. It's been 7 years for me. It's addictive. You know, it's like.
Yeah, when I started looking through yours, I just kept like scanning back and back and back and back. I was like, oh my gosh, 7 years is amazing.
Yeah, well, at one point, so I'm sure you're aware of the publication Bicycle Retailer and Industry News. Retail Rag, as we like to call it. Well, and they did a podcasting story in, I think it was the May 1st issue, and they decided I was the hardest working podcaster in the business for cycling. And I'm like, well, yeah, I put on 50 shows a year, you know. It's.
Oh my gosh, yes. The weekly, you know, dropping the show, because it's all the editing and all that stuff too. Like the interviews are the fun part, but everything else that goes on behind the scenes is.
Exactly. Brutal. The interviewing is the fun part. Well, let's move on. So one of the areas in which you excel, and I really appreciated this part of the work that you do, is offering great advice to women. You wrote Ride Comfortable, Ride Happy, Saddle, comma, Sore. So you want to explain the title?
Yes. So a few years ago, I was at cyclocross races, and I would have women coming up to me, and you know, they just knew me as someone who writes about bikes, and they'd come up and be like, hey, do you know what's going on? And then they'd describe some kind of rash or chafing, or in a couple of really memorable occasions, straight up pull their shorts down and show me what the issue was. And I would be like, oh my gosh, see a doctor. I have no idea what to tell you.
See a doctor.
And I realized there were so many women that just had no idea who to talk to. And this is, you know, 4 years ago. And I think we've gotten a lot better about talking about saddle sores and that kind of issue. But at the time, I couldn't really find any resources. And I tried. I tried so hard because I didn't want to write about this stuff. My mother is still probably angry at me for, you know, talking about lady parts all day, every day. But I feel like it was a very important service. So I ended up asking just very casually on Twitter. I was like, hey, does anyone have like an awkward female lady parts related cycling question? And I thought I'd get like two and write an article. I got 60 messages.
Like, I'm not surprised.
Yeah. So, you know, it just kind of blossomed into this book and to the second iteration of it that I came out with a year and a half ago now, or 2 years ago now, the Ride Comfortable, Ride Happy version, is because I realized that was what so many people were missing. I knew so many women that were quitting cycling because, you know, they were going numb every ride, or they were getting this one saddle sore that just would not go away. It wasn't comfortable, so it wasn't fun. So if we could make things, you know, much more comfortable, then we could actually be a lot happier with our riding. So, you know, came out with the book, and I go around and give talks at bike shops and have women's nights, and we talk about lady parts, and it gets a little rowdy, and it's so much fun.
And we drink a little beer, and we so
a
let
little
me,
bit of beer.
So because we can't, there are some things we can't say on the broadcast, but we can say them on the podcast. So if somebody hears something on the broadcast and it's bleeped, I'm sorry. Go listen to the podcast. Give us some advice. About, I mean, I have my issue, and I'm a bike fitter. That I've been fitting bikes since 1984, so I know a lot of things about it. But there are still issues that I can't solve. Sometimes it's a saddle, sometimes it's shorts, sometimes it's just you're not clean enough. But give us some tips that you're giving to women who are coming to you.
Oh my gosh! Well, I mean, I'm sure you know the obvious one. The first one is, it is shocking how many women are just, you know, coming in and saying like, oh, I'm numb every ride. And I'm like, well, have you gotten a bike fit, or have you adjusted the saddle at all? And they're like, no, the guy at the shop said it looked fine. Yeah, so I've been riding it like this. I'm like, first of all, the like 17-year-old that fit your bike for you in 30 seconds in the shop probably didn't know what he was doing. Just a guess. So my first thing is, you know, if you have a problem, for the love of God, don't let it continue. Go talk to someone. And the amount of women that don't want to do that is just amazing. And men, honestly.
I know.
But
yes.
Ugh, it makes me crazy. So I am such a bike fit advocate. So thank you for what you're doing for the world.
What else?
Yeah, the other thing is, honestly, it's just that what works for your friend isn't going to work for you. As far as our lady parts go, we're all so different. So even if you're the same exact size and shape as your friend, your pelvic bones might be wider. Your labia is probably different than your friend's. You know, there's different lengths there. There's different sizes. There's different sensitivity levels. So the saddle or the pair of shorts that works perfect for your best friend is probably not going to work with you. Because we have so much sensitive tissue down there that's getting just pushed right on the saddle. In the book, Jade Wilcoxon, a pro cyclist, said that men are lucky because they can sort of move their stuff up and out of the way.
Right.
We have folds, and it goes, you know, we're just right on the, like, right on the saddle. So if we don't have the right saddle shorts combination, it can be brutal. It's so brutal. She also gave me the amazing tip of, she'd be at the track and she would actually have, she'd use like one of those gel eye masks that are good for like soothing your eyes when they're puffy. She'd have one of them in the freezer. And on the way home, she'd actually have that down her pants and rock like that to like ease the discomfort there. So it's not just amateurs.
It's so interesting that people don't realize how much it keeps you from doing what you want to do. You know, when when people won't, they'll get off the bike. They will not seek that advice. I'm so glad you wrote this book. That's so cool. We're going to post a link to that book on our website, on our Twitter feed. I really appreciate that. Let me take a moment to remind our listeners, we're speaking with Molly Herford. She's in Belgium, so we have the cool technology of Skype. And it's a really clear one today. We're doing really well. So another one of your books, and I don't know where you find the time to write all this, is Fueling Your Ride. And I liked your most recent post, When Eating Healthy Messes Up Your Workout. Tell us more about that.
Ah, this was such a fun one to write. So there's this fashion magazine for kind of edgy fashion, Nylon. And I kind of convinced them to let me start writing a fitness column that I call Fitness for Cool People. So I kind of poke fun at some of like the more, you know, shape or self kind of crowd. And it's been really fun to write like that instead of just writing about straight cycling. But this article was one of my favorites to write lately because the amount of people, and I'm going to include pro cyclists, pro runners, but also just all of us regular people, we have this tendency to glom on to these, I'm not even going to call them fad diets, because everyone hears fad diets and are like, oh, I don't do fad diets. I do paleo. Like, I don't do fad diets. I'm ketogenic, or I'm a raw vegan. And, you know, it drives me crazy when
I don't do fad diets. What a great comment. That's a good hashtag right there.
Yeah, it's such a common thing where no one wants to admit that they're following a fad diet, but really a lot of those are. And they're all totally fine in their own right. But so many times we forget that we're athletes in addition to being humans. So, you know, you have the raw vegan who's taking in almost no protein and is wondering why, you know, the workouts are suffering from that. Or you have the high fat, low carb person who wonders why he has no sprint, or, you know, is feeling like kind of faint before a race, or has a head rush because he takes a gel. So there are so many things like that. And, you know, on the surface, you're like, oh, I'm eating this, you know, really healthy lifestyle diet. And, you know, unfortunately, that doesn't necessarily fuel our workouts. So that article was just kind of diving into some of the more common fad diets right now and what some of the problems for your workouts might be. And on the topic of ketogenic, all that fat does not always sit well when you're riding or running. I don't care how conditioned to it you are.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So another of your passions, which I think is a really Another of your passions is Shred Girls. And tell us who the Shred Girls are and what we need to know about them and what that whole idea is.
So this is my, I guess, most recent foray into a book kind of thing. And it's funny, by the way, I was on a radio show a few months ago and they tried to list all of the things that I'd sent them, that I, books that I wrote, like sites that I run, all that kind of stuff. And after like a minute, I was like, please just stop. We can just talk.
Yeah,
it's fine.
I gave up, you know. I just, and you'll hear it in the opening of the show. We just dabbled in it. I decided, oh no, it's way too much. You're insane. You're insane. I love it.
But it's all so fun.
Yeah, I know.
But Tread Girls is the most fun right now. So this is, I keep telling people, it's sort of like if you took the Babysitter's Club series and you took out the babysitting and put them on bikes, you'd have the Tread Girls. So it's right now, it's a 3-book series. It's coming out with Rodale starting next year, but it's also morphed into where I have a website for it and we have real life Tread Girls. But basically the concept is you have these girls that aren't necessarily into bikes, kind of discovering bikes and finding each other and forming this little crew and, you know, just having a blast on bikes. And it's the book that I wish I'd been able to read when I was, you know, 8 or 9 years old, because when I was 8 or 9 and read Babysitter's Club books, I started a Babysitter's Club. So if I had read about bikes, I probably would have been susceptible enough that I would have started biking. So this is really my secret agenda to get a lot more little girls out on bikes and to make the ones that are already shredding on bikes, you know, really realize that they're doing something super cool. And the test readers so far, so the ones that got the original first book before Rodale actually picked it up and agreed to publish it. I had a 13-year-old. I went to a mountain bike race and I was doing a little clinic with the girls. And then after, we were talking about the book and hanging out. And one girl just took the book and she sat for 3 hours behind the poster I had and just read through the entire thing. And it was the coolest thing that I'd ever gotten to see.
How long is the book?
It's middle grade novel. So
oh, okay.
It's, you know, like I'm trying to think of other books that are out right now, and of course I'm blanking on it, but a little shorter than like a Babysitter's Club, sort of like a Sweet Valley Twins kind of thing. If
well,
I'm,
you've lost
anyone
me.
Remembers the 90s.
No, I don't. I'm much older than that. You know, I don't really identify with this, but my daughter would absolutely, even though she's a lot older. That is, you know, she writes for that sort of genre of, I don't know, the vampire kind of stuff, maybe.
Yeah.
So she would get it.
Yeah, this one is like the step before the vampires. It's like the tween.
I got it. Oh, what a great time to get young girls interested in cycling. That is so cool. Do you mind if I ask how old you are?
Yes, I just turned 30 this year.
Oh, you're a kid.
Amazing.
I see.
I'm really happy I can say I'm a baby now. When I turned 30, I almost cried, but.
Oh, it's, you know what? It's uphill from here. No, it's down. No, it's okay. You'll love it.
I think we're good. I think we're good.
Let's talk adventures. What kind of adventures have you had you'd like to share with my listeners? You personally, not just helping other riders and not just writing books for women and for kids. What about you personally? Give us one of your crazy adventures. You and Peter. How about the two of you?
Yeah. Well, I guess our craziest would be this summer we decided to tackle an Ironman, and I've done one before.
Okay, you're crazy.
I know. Like, let's just add 20 hours a week of training on top of all of our stuff. Like, the race day is nothing. The race day is just a day. It's everything leading up to it that just takes forever. And we decided to do it the week after Mountain Bike Nationals for him. So we drove basically all the way across Canada to Alberta, and he raced Mountain Bike Nationals. I trained in Canmore, which is one of the most gorgeous places you can train. We were swimming in this crystal clear quarry lake. It was fantastic. And then we drove another 15 hours all the way out to Squamish in BC, which is the most just beautiful area in the world. And, you know, we had an extra few days, literally 6 days between the races, but we had 6 days to swim in these more amazing glacier lakes and just really, you know, ride around there and stuff, and then do Ironman Canada. So we did that. We were living partially out of our van, partially with friends. We slept in the van the night before the race because we were staying like 10 miles from the venue and we didn't want to deal with traffic getting in the morning. So we just slept in some subdivision at the end of a dead end road and just really hoped that no one was going to come and like disturb our sleep the night before a race. woke up at 4 a.m., went to the start, and we got in and, you know, went pretty well. I got out of the water like 15 minutes ahead of Peter. So that was, my personal high-fiving myself moment. He smoked me on the bike.
Of course he did. Right?
Yeah, exactly. Professional cyclist, fair enough. Yeah, right. I think he actually had the third fastest bike split, like including the pros. So I'll give him that one. Then we were about even on the run. So I felt pretty good about that. We finished. We had like two more days to kind of hang out. Then we went to Fernie, BC to do this crazy camping and hiking trip with our friends. And I climbed a bunch of mountains while he mountain biked. I didn't have my mountain bike with me and that really hurt, but I had fun hiking.
Well, you just rode 112 miles one day. You were fine. Exactly. You were fine.
Exactly. The happiest moment of my life was the day after Ironman. We immediately packed the bikes into bike boxes and shipped them back to Ontario. I've never been so happy to like wave goodbye to a bike before. Normally it's a bittersweet, like, oh, I'm not going to get to ride for a few days. This was just like, get it out of my sight. I never want to see this thing again.
Yeah, that's true. Who's been the biggest influence in pursuing all these crazy projects? Are you just so self-motivated?
I'm pretty self-motivated, I'm not going to lie. But I mean,
oh, good. Thank you.
Yeah. Obviously, like, Peter is a huge motivator because he's like me. We travel together for everything. We both work very independent jobs. So pretty much every time I come to him with a crazy idea, he's all for it. But then the people at Bicycling have been just insanely amazing to me. The editor-in-chief that was there when I started, Bill Strickland, is just one of my major, I'm gonna say he's a mentor. He probably would disagree, but I'm gonna call him that. And he's fantastic. And now the current editor-in-chief, Leah Flickinger, is one of my closest friends and another mentor and someone who is just so supportive of pretty much every like dumb, crazy idea that I have. And it's so awesome to have such cool people that I work for.
They are very cool people. In fact, Gloria Liu was on the show last week. So, she
I saw that.
Yeah,
Gloria's
she does.
Amazing.
Yeah, she does the gift guide with us every year. So that's really, really nice. What are you working on for 2018 that is either insane or not insane? But any project, what's new besides the Shred Girls books?
Yeah, the Shred Girls are sort of the big thing. And I'm trying to do a lot with the bike park that kind of inspired the first location of the book series. So the first in the book series is called Lindsay's Joyride, and it's loosely based on Joyride 150 up near Toronto. So I've been working a lot with the park owner, so we're planning some really cool stuff up there for 2018. But then actually the book gets released next fall, so I'm really looking forward to that with Rodale. I actually just found out who the illustrator is going to be for the new version, because we're going to actually add a bunch of illustrations. So excited for that. I've somehow gotten roped into starting a off-road cycling club up in Collingwood in Ontario where we live. So I'm doing a lot more actually local stuff. I think community and community building are kind of my big things for 2018. So I'm excited to spend some time in one place for a change. Oh, and I'm doing yoga teacher training actually starting in March.
Oh,
and
where?
Up in Toronto, actually.
You're not doing the Spinga stuff, are you? Or are you?
No.
Okay. Yeah. I did teacher training here in Cleveland. So, yeah.
I saw you did that. I was like, oh my gosh, I'm so excited to talk to you.
Well, what's really interesting is every year when I renew my certification, I go, oh my God, it's been how many years now? You know, because I didn't start teaching yoga till I was in my mid 50s. So I look at it and I go, this is not possible, but it is. I think this coming February, it'll be 17 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah. I have a practice that's mainly, it's stiff white guys is what we call it. And it could be any, it doesn't matter what your, what your race is. It's just, what stiff white guys are. They just can't fold anywhere. And it's older women, so mainly my practice is for active seniors. Yeah.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
Our joke is we really want to start no BS yoga up in Collingwood because we know a lot of cyclist types that like the idea of flexibility and stretching, but the classes up where we are very spiritual, I'm going to say, and they just can't get on board with it. which, I mean, I love those classes, but I think what they really needed is just some really good, no nonsense, simple, straightforward.
Yeah, that's what I teach. Just, you know, sit there and learn to bend.
Exactly. So I'm pretty stoked on that. It's something good. That's been on my bucket list for such a long time. And finally, I'll have 10 weeks to manage to actually be in one place to do it. So I was like, this is the time. We've got to do it now.
So let's get away from cycling, get away from yoga, get away from all of that. And what do you do to relax in your spare time? And don't tell me you go out on your bike. That's not fair.
I read terrible novels.
Oh, good.
Yeah, and we walk a lot. Peter and I are pretty obsessed with walking lately. When we were in London, we walked 20 miles Saturday and then 20 miles on Sunday.
Yeah, okay. Just see, that's obsessive, Molly. You're going back to, you know?
We had to be tourists. But no, normally,
that's
like
true.
Today we walked the 4K to go to the grocery store to get a few, you know, just like a backpack full of groceries and walk back with that. So it's kind of a gentle workout, but it's more just time that we get to be out of the house and chatting with each other and the phones aren't next to us and computers aren't distracting us. So I love that.
Yeah, that's true. It's
Cheesy novels, walking. I've watched every season of Frasier probably 300 times.
Okay.
That's my relaxing. I don't know.
I got it. Well, if it makes you laugh, you know, laughter
it does.
Yeah. That's another thing about my yoga classes. We laugh a lot.
That's perfect.
It's just not that serious. So let me ask you my three questions before I let you go. This has been such a fun conversation. I'm really glad you were able to take the time. What's your favorite food?
Oh, gosh. Tacos.
Okay, then. That could be a lot of things, right? All right. What kind of music do you like to listen to?
Circus punk.
All right. I'm not going to pretend that I get it, but okay, that's cool. Circus punk. Do you and Peter have any pets?
I have a turtle named Sven, but he lives with his grandparents in New Jersey right now.
Turtle named Sven. Okay, fine. I guess that's a pretty easy pet to take care of at this point, right? Because you guys are traveling a lot.
He's pretty simple.
Yeah.
Exactly. Oh. But 2018, the other big thing is we're going to get a dog. That's
that
on
a girl.
The bucket. Yeah.
Yeah? What, do you know what you want? Or are you going to get a shelter dog?
Oh, I'm going to get a dachshund. I am obsessed with dachshunds. They are my spirit animal because they think that they're way bigger than they are. And they act like they have this amazing attitude.
It's
they're
true.
Fantastic.
It's
I'm
true.
So excited.
A short hair or a long hair?
I'd love a long hair because I think they're gorgeous, but I will settle for whichever one we can find. They're actually surprisingly difficult to find at various times of the year in Ontario. So it'll be whichever one we can manage to get our hands on at this point.
Do you have a name picked out for your doxy?
If it's going to be a blonde long hair, it's going to be Boopsy. And if it's short haired, it's going to be Duke, based on Doonesbury characters, because my dad is obsessed with Doonesbury.
Yes. And you actually wrote something this past week about your dad, when I thought it was an excellent, excellent piece. I really liked it a lot.
Oh, yeah. My dad is amazing. And he got really into he's into everything I'm into. When I surfed, he started surfing. When I got into cyclocross, he got into cyclocross, and he raced a local race last weekend, and he called to tell me about it, and he was so freaking happy and just all bubbly and smiling and so cheerful and wanted to give me his race report. And I was at this race where all of these elite racers were finishing and just looking so miserable. And, you know, it was just one of those moments where I was like, oh my gosh, this is what we all need to remember when we're racing bikes, is that even if it's work, we still chose to do it. It's still fun.
And if it isn't fun, you need to stop doing it and find something that is fun.
Yeah, we're maybe doing something wrong.
Exactly. Well, Molly, thank you so much for taking time to talk with me. Enjoy your stay, what's left of it in Europe, and really enjoy your yoga teacher training. You're going to love it. It's so much fun.
Thank you. And, thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Happy holidays to you and Peter, and we'll talk again.
Absolutely.
All
Take
right.
care.
You too.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Molly Herford joined me from Antwerp, Belgium. You can find her online at a bunch of places, including theoutdooredit.com, consummateathlete.com, saddlesorewomen.com, and on Facebook. Thanks to Molly and Dr. Gabe Merkin for joining me this week. We'll be back next week with a brand new episode of The Outspoken Cyclist. Please stay safe, and remember, if you have a chance, go for a ride. Bye-bye.
for joining us today on The Outspoken Cyclist with Diane Jenks. We hope you enjoyed this week's show and welcome your comments and thoughts on Twitter and Facebook. Visit OutspokenCyclist.com to hear this and all past shows. We'll be back next week with more great conversation and news from the world of cycling. Remember, you can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or Stitcher and never miss an episode. The Outspoken Cyclist is a copyrighted production of DBL Promotions with the assistance of WJCU-FM Cleveland, a service of John Carroll University. Thanks again for listening, ride safely, and we'll see you next week.